Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we'll begin this hour with a call-in on something that Britain's baby king won't have to worry about, upward mobility. How did you rise up from poverty to the middle class? Tell us your story, 212-433-WNYC. And I ask because of the big new study just released, done at Harvard and elsewhere, of upward mobility, one of the most important economic measures, so tied to the American dream. In old Europe, there was no upward mobility. Class was a definer for life. If you were Caden Williams' baby, no problem. If you were a poor laborer's kid, big problem. The United States was founded in part as a reaction to that. But we've had a tougher time with upward mobility and concentration of wealth in recent decades, a tougher time than many countries in Europe, in fact. But now comes this study that the Times says is based on millions of anonymous earnings records, a huge study, and it finds upward mobility is much more likely in some cities in the United States than others. New York actually is near the top, along with Boston, Salt Lake City, Pittsburgh, and Seattle. If you're born in the bottom 20% in New York, you wind up on average around the 40th percentile. Not bad compared to some of the really low mobility places like Chicago, Atlanta, and Detroit. Not that there isn't a lot better that New York could be or that it hasn't been getting worse in recent years. But if you grew up poor but are now middle class, call in and tell us your story. How did you get there? What personal factors and what outside factors do you think made that possible? You know, if you think you're Horatio Alger pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, where did you get your bootstraps? What social conditions were your bootstraps to pull yourself up by, in addition to whatever you did yourself? The study found, and it's so fascinating if it actually pans out to be true, that certain social conditions are most correlated with people's upward mobility. Good public transit, as we talked about last hour. How about that? So you can get to jobs outside your neighborhood without much money. Also, good public schools, no surprise there. Also, economic integration. If you lived in an isolated island of poverty with only other poor people around, much harder. The article used Atlanta as an example of a metro area where there are vast neighborhoods full of poor housing, less integrated by economics than New York. Family structure, two parents matter on average, or a little more precisely, as the article put it, living in areas with more two-parent families seems to correlate with a poor kid's chances of growing up to be middle class. So fascinating findings, and I wonder if your stories have correlates to any of these factors out there, in addition to whatever was going on in your own life with your own immediate family or yourself. If you grew up poor but are now middle class, call in and tell us your story. How did you get there? 212-433-WNYC. Tammy in Bedford-Stuyvesant, you're up first. Thank you so much for calling, Tammy. Hi.
Hi, good morning.
So tell us, where'd you grow up? What was it like?
I grew up in Long Island City in Queensbridge Houses, actually.
Uh-huh.
And I had all of those so-called strikes against me that you just mentioned. You know, a single-parent home. My mother raised my sister and I by herself. There were a lot of people in poverty around us, but there were also lots of hardworking people around us in the neighborhood. People think that everyone in the projects is super poor. Yes, we were poor, but everyone worked hard, and I saw that. One of the things, I think one major factor that helped me get to middle classdom, is that my mother encouraged me to be practical.
Mm-hmm.
And I always managed to find a job when I was in high school, starting from 14, actually.
How about the people around you? Would you say a lot of other kids from your generation in Queensbridge Houses have grown up to be middle class, and there was something that you can hook to that community or maybe the location of that community within the city, and it's not hard to get on public transit from Long Island City or I don't know what, or the culture, you know, of practicality and hard work that you were talking about being exposed to? How'd your peers do?
I actually am not in touch with a lot of people that I grew up with, unfortunately, and I hope that they're doing well. But I will say, for me personally, I remember when the Q train at 21st Street, Queensbridge, opened up, mm-hmm. when the MTA put a stop there. And I was able to get out of the neighborhood and explore and go find a job, go to schools outside of the neighborhood, and just get around easier.
That's so interesting. On the transit level and on the personal level, Tammy, thank you so much, and good luck to you. Ginger in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ginger.
Hi.
Ginger, can you hear me? Yeah, now I can hear you.
Yes, I can hear you perfectly.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Bushwick, Brooklyn in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, at the time, as you can imagine, one of the lowest income poor, quite frankly, communities in the city at a time when the city was burning.
And today?
Today I live in Bed-Stuy, quite an interesting sort of just across the other side of Broadway. But the story is, essentially, I went to one of the prep schools here in the independent schools, the Dalton School in New York, and then from there went on to Harvard and then pretty much did the predictable thing. And now, with my husband and I consider ourselves fairly middle class.
How'd you wind up at Dalton from Bushwick? Because that's not a usual, typical route.
Yeah. in addition to, like, the previous caller, I grew up in a single-parent family. My mom is an immigrant from Central America. She spoke zero English. But essentially, how I got to Dalton is I was a fairly ambitious kid. Just really liked sort of school, and I was tracked. I was tracked in elementary school. I went to the local neighborhood school in Bushwick, but was in the track classes. And then I went to a magnet school that was started by a woman who, an African-American woman who went to UPenn and wanted to create essentially something with opportunity for students. And then at that magnet school, I was in the track class, classes within that magnet school, and there was a teacher there who identified me essentially as well, a couple of other students who mm-hmm. could apply to private school. And so that's how I applied and eventually got to Dalton.
And Ginger, I'm going to have to go because the line is breaking up pretty badly, but thank you and good luck to you. And Michelle in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. I'm going to be very quick. I attribute my ability to now be a professional. It really goes back to my grandparents. They migrated here from Jamaica, the earliest one in the 1920s. And I started my life really in the South Bronx. That's where my parents lived. My grandparents came here. They lived in Harlem. My grandmother was a domestic and my grandfather was a janitor. But they also always wanted to have their own. So they did their own businesses at home. My grandfather fixed televisions and radios, and my grandmother was a dressmaker. And they pushed us to be educated. You know, my mother and father, we started out with them together. We lived in the South Bronx. Mm-hmm. And my parents in the 70s bought a house in the Bronx. But now I live in my grandmother's building.
Wow.
In Harlem, because throughout the years when Harlem was still pretty much redlined, you didn't have any banks and so on, my grandmother paid off her mortgage on her house. And my mother struggled to keep it, raising four kids. My parents divorced. And I, after college, went there to take care of my grandmother with my mom, and I stayed there. And I live there now because of their efforts. I can relate to your previous caller. I went to public high school, public elementary school, high schools that were tracked. And the push then was to be in college-bound programs, and that helped me a lot. I went to CUNY. I got my bachelor's at Hunter. And later on, through student loans and working, I too worked as early as 14, got working papers. Yeah. I traveled on the subway. I'm going to Hunter. I took three trains every morning and three trains every evening to get back uptown to the Bronx. But family, we pushed for education. My grandparents and my mother pushed for us to get an education.
It's so classic, isn't it? Family, education, the enough mass transit, even though it was three trains, to get you somewhere without having to own a car or have more money to get around?
Absolutely. And the transit system was monumental to our lives. I grew up with family and friends. When we left high school in the years when there was a push to spread students out to different schools based on their interests. And, you know, we lived in a very close-knit West Indian community, but we were going to school all over the city. I was in Manhattan. My neighbors were going to Brooklyn Tech and going to the technical schools all over the city, mm-hmm. and we were very much reliant.
Michelle, thank you so much for calling, and good luck to you. Let's go to Alan in Old Tappan. You're on WNYC. Hi, Alan.
How you doing, Brian?
Good.
I grew up in the Bronx as well, over near Van Cortlandt Park, and it was really a time that you could dream. I could remember I was on Orchard Beach with my mother and with my two brothers, and I looked out and I saw a yacht out there, and I told my mother I wanted one. And she looked at me and she said, if you work hard, you go to school, you'll do well, and you'll buy one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that you would find it very hard to say that to your children today.
What else do you think were factors for you? So your mother told you, she gave you the ethic of hard work paying off.
Right. I think that the education system was very different. I went to DeWitt Clinton High School. I graduated in 1961, and then I went on to college, Fairleigh Dickinson. And in my high school, they actually separated the student body into three parts. They had the regular students, they had honor and scholarship, and you didn't stay within that group in all your studies. You, depending on what your level was in math or in science or in English, and the teachers actually worked with the students that were in the regular classes to get them to move forward so that you can go to different mm-hmm. levels.
That's good.
And everything was more open. And, you know, what I go back to is when they broke up all the conglomerates and everything. Everything in business seems to be consolidated. I got to say that I'm really fortunate. I made it into the 1%, not even into the middle class.
Mm, so you got that? You got that yacht?
No, I didn't. But I got a couple of Ferraris, four Bentleys, and a Lamborghini. I had no interest in boats.
Alan, thank you. Thank you very, very much for sharing your story. I appreciate it. We're taking your stories of upward mobility. If you grew up poor but made it to the middle class, how did you do it? What did it have to do with the people around you? What did it have to do with the social conditions? Some of the things in this new big study of different cities, upward mobility, New York ranks pretty well because of less social isolation and physical isolation of poor people compared to places like Atlanta and Chicago and Detroit. 212-433-WNYC. And Catherine in Manhattan, you're on the air. Hi, Catherine.
Brian, I grew up in public housing in Darien, Connecticut, and that's a big part of what I attribute to being able to make it into the middle class. You know, my parents, I don't know if they were so ambitious, they were more hardworking. They both grew up in real poverty, and they were able to get public housing in Darien, Connecticut, which, as you might know, is one of the richest suburbs in the area. And so I went to just a regular public school, but I was surrounded by extremely wealthy people, extremely ambitious, and ambitious people. And the assumption was for all of us students that we were going to college, you know, just because of the environment I was in. And it was I just really attribute to my whole understanding of myself as having been able to be in that environment. So the significant thing to me is that the public housing that I grew up in was in a rich
yes.
area.
So the high school you went to was a public high
yeah.
school. It was your neighborhood-zoned high school, which just happened
exactly.
to include rich people and poor people.
Yeah, well, not many poor people, you know.
Yeah.
The public housing was basically a block of actual houses. We weren't mm-hmm. in there was an apartment building there, but it was small houses, which, by the way, were just torn down last year. So
really?
I'm very upset.
Is there any more public housing in Darien that you know
you
of?
You know, I've wanted to go back and invest. I think there are a few of the houses left, but I don't know if Darien is making up for. I don't think so. They're building these huge, you know, McMansions there. So it's very upsetting to me because I really, I mean, my parents, as I say, were really hardworking, and so I got that ethic from them. But I just saw myself as obviously going to college. I didn't even think of myself as poor because I lived in this really rich area, and I went to this really wealthy high school because it was a local public high school. And I just thought it was so important for just my view of myself.
And this is the essence, I think, of what that study found. One of the things that they said in particular as, you know, a particular attribute of cities that have more upward mobility is that poor families don't live only among other poor families. And so if you can disperse pockets of poverty and not have them become big zones of poverty, then more people are going to have experiences like yours and more people are going to have that much more likelihood of being able to move up. But of course, there are such political obstacles to that. They've tried these experiments in a few cities and have found pretty good results. But then when they tried to replicate it in the 90s, on a widespread basis in America, there was so much political resistance because every middle-class neighborhood says, not in my backyard with those poor people who are going to come in with their crime.
Yeah, I know. And it's hurtful to me to know that people think that way, because my little neighborhood of public housing was just, you know, just another neighborhood. I mean, we were poorer, but otherwise we weren't any different than the other kids. And as I said, I wasn't even cognizant of being poor. I knew that my house was smaller.
But didn't you have less stuff than the other kids who would go to school?
I'm sorry, less stuff?
Less stuff?
Yeah, well, my mom was a really cheap person, so I actually attributed a lot of my she was very frugal, and I'm grateful for it, because she was able to buy a small house eventually in Darien, which then was sold. And now I'm actually I'm in my new apartment right now. I just bought a place in Manhattan partly because of my mom's frugality. And being in Darien, she was able to scoop up a house there really inexpensively.
I'm going to leave it there. And
thanks, Brian.
I appreciate all you told us, and good luck to you. Great story with, I think, a really strong central lesson. Let's see. We have time for one more, and I think I'm going to go to the oldest caller who we have on the board. Dorothy in Croton-on-Hudson, are you 94 years old?
Yes, I am.
Thank you so much for calling in.
You're welcome. I was going to mention something that nobody seems to have talked about, and that is that the role that unions played in raising people from poverty to less poverty. That's what happened with my father. He came to this country. He and my mother both were immigrants. I'm a first generation American. My father was lucky to get a job in a factory, in a mill, and a shop.
Where did he come from?
He came from Bessarabia, which was at that time part of Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother came from a different part of Russia, and they met in the United States. But the point is, we were accustomed to poverty. Everybody was poor. During the Depression, you weren't as ashamed as people are now of being poor, or people have been of being poor. But my father joined the union that covered the kind of work that he did, and that union made it possible for him to earn a living wage. He and my mother were both very concerned that we should have, my brother and I should have an education, and I must say they were more concerned for my brother than for me, because that was what the
at that time,
custom
the
was.
Boys, yeah.
The boy has to be able to earn a living. The girl has to be able to marry. Well, I was lucky to get into a college that didn't charge anything. In fact, right now they're in the process of changing that, and there's a big battle going on.
Oh, so that would be Cooper Union?
Yes. When I went there, there were very, very few charges, and I worked during the day and went to college at night. It seemed like forever, but I got my degree and was able to earn a decent living on the strength of what I learned at Cooper Union and what I learned on the job.
Mm-hmm.
But
and it's so interesting, and we're going to run out of time, but it's so interesting that you bring up unions, because they weren't referenced in the study, at least in the New York Times article on the study that I read through last night. And I wonder, because there are so few private sector workers represented by unions anymore, whether that's declined so much as a factor in raising people up from poverty to the middle class, so much that it didn't even get mentioned.
Well, but it did at the time when people were poor and raising themselves up, which is maybe go back 30, 40 years, something like that.
At that time. And so maybe there's a lesson there. If people are taking policy conversations out of this big new study, maybe that's one to bring up too. Whatever happened to the unions, if you're looking for private sector as well as public sector. Those are the unions that are strong, as you know, are still in the private sector. But to have another conversation about public sector unions. Dorothy, thank you so much for calling us.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Thanks to all of you who called with your stories of making it from growing up poor to middle class as an adult. You can keep posting those stories to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer's show. Look up that article by David Leonhardt in the Times yesterday. I think you'll find that study fascinating. We'll try to have one of the study authors coming up on a subsequent show. Coming up next, is the Jersey Shore being rebuilt without the next Sandy in mind? We'll have a WNYC investigation, the results of that, and your calls on looking at the shore this summer through post-Sandy eyes. Stay with us.